Good morning. Welcome to House Committee on Higher Education Innovation and Workforce Development. It's Wednesday, May 13th. We have two items today. Before we get to the discussion around Eastern Oregon and Southern Oregon, we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 759. Senator Gelser, if you'd like to join us. We heard this bill not that long ago, and rather than ask Victoria to do a summary, maybe we ask you, Senator Gelser, to bring us up to speed on what's happened since we were last together.
Thank you, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Senate District 8, which includes Albany, Corvallis, Philomath, and the surrounding areas. When I was last before you, we talked about Senate Bill 759, which is to address the issue of campus rape. I also want to point out at your desk, we received a letter yesterday from President Ed Ray, co-signed by Brenda Tracy, who spoke with you the other week indicating their support for the bill as it would be amended today with the -4 amendments. When we came before you the other week, the committee had asked for a couple of changes to the bill. The committee expressed some concerns about the timing of when this notification was provided, that it should be provided not just at that time when that sexual assault is reported, but that it should also be available as part of kind of new student orientation activities. Thinking about Representative Nierman and his technological background, I also added into that amendment request it would make sense that it was easily accessible on the institution's website, which was an easy thing to do. And that became the -3 amendment, and we wanted to do these things to price them separately. The other concern that was raised by Representative McEwen and some of the others that you heard offer testimony was that the definition was too narrow, and it actually would not have picked up circumstances like that of Brenda Tracy. If you'll recall, Brenda Tracy visited an apartment that was off campus when she was gang raped by 3 Oregon State University football players. As drafted in that last form, she would not have had access to this information. What we wanted to do was craft a definition of who this covers in a way that does not leave institutions responsible for everything that happens to students any place they are, regardless of whether or not it's related to the institution. So the definition of who is covered is the alleged victim of sexual assault is a student at the University of the College, and the alleged sexual assault occurs on the grounds or at the facility of the University of College, or the alleged perpetrator of the sexual assault is a student at the University or College, or a member of the faculty or staff of the University of College or College, regardless of where the alleged sexual assault occurred. What's important about this is this victim needs to have access to that information about the campus disciplinary procedure. That is of interest to the institution to know that they have a person alleged to have committed a sexual assault on campus. That goes to those prevention efforts that we talked about before. What a couple of things that are important to remember, this definition would not include, for instance, if I am walking down the street on Oregon State University property and a stranger is walking down the street at Oregon State University property and neither of us are related to the university, but I am raped on the campus of Oregon State University, this does not cover me because neither of us have a relationship with the university, neither of us have an impact. If there is a high school program that is using the dorms at the University of Oregon for some sort of a music camp or a summer camp, and one high school student assaults another high school student, this bill does not cover them because neither of them are associated with the university. However, if a high school student was assaulted by a university student or faculty member, then they would be provided the notice. The other thing that's important to remember, and I want to be really clear about this on the record, this bill requires institutions to do two things. One is to create a protocol. What do we do when someone comes and reports that they are a student of ours that has been sexually assaulted on our campus or by another member of our campus community, or when we are contacted by someone who has been assaulted by a member of our campus community like Brenda Tracy? So we tell them they have to figure out what they're going to do. The only thing that we require them to do as part of that protocol is that they have to provide this written notice. It does not require that counseling services or medical services or any kind of services be provided. It is simply this piece of paper, this link to the website, this written notice that describes how you go through that campus disciplinary procedure, how you access community hotlines. It would be that same notice for everyone. And I'm happy to answer any. And one other thing I wanted to point out, the language that says ensure that victims of sexual assault receive necessary services and assistance in situations where that language has always been in the bill. That is the precise language that has followed the bill all the way along, and the bill only requires the provision of the notice.
Very good. So that last statement, just so I say it like you said it, the shall adopt a written protocol to ensure, it's the emphasis is on the adoption of the written protocol, not on the services in terms of this bill.
Correct. This bill, if you look at the way the sentence is constructed, it does not require services to be provided. It requires that a protocol be adopted, and then it requires that the only thing that we require be part of that protocol. We don't require any services. The only thing that we require is that notice. And then we describe what that notice is moving forward. And then the dash four, where the dash four came from, I was concerned and talked with the chair. We met after the meeting here. We wanted to price these. So we had done that geography piece. Representative McEwen had referred to it as a circle of geography. And Chair Reed's notification piece, we priced those separately. They both came back as minimal. And in those discussions, we realized the dash four is just a combination of the dash two and dash three. And we realized if we were going to ensure that notice was given in a situation like Brenda Tracy's, the word needed to be victim, not student. Brenda was not a student at Oregon State University when she came to Corvallis and was raped by three football team members, and that's the only other thing here. We swapped out student to victim, and that word is in that section around the notice.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Gelser? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator. Section on the dash four is section one, the sub B then. This is an expansion of what the original base bill had in it, correct, in terms of the perpetrator of the assault is a student of the University of College or a member of the faculty or staff of the University of College. That's an expansion, is it not, of that population group?
Chair Reed, Representative Johnson, I think that the intention and the way that we had discussed it in the past was, of course, notice would be provided if somebody came to a university and made a report to a university that a member of that university committee had assaulted them. The question that came up was that the language was not clear. So this makes that more explicit. In all of the testimony we've talked, for instance, about Brenda Tracy, we have to have that sub B in order to cover Brenda Tracy.
And then just to follow up, but then regardless of where the alleged sexual assault occurred, so it's not attached with the institution at all, it could be 3,000 miles away. Is that correct?
Chair Reed, Representative.
Is it intent to govern any sort of conduct by the students, faculty, or staff of a university or college?
Chair Reed, Representative Johnson, it is intended, this is how it would work. If, in order for this to trigger to do the notice, you would need to contact the university and say, a member of your community has assaulted me. So the way that this is going to work is that person is going to be identifiable. We're picturing this as the basketball team goes to a tournament. They are out of state and they assault someone in that process.
It doesn't have to be an athletic team.
It doesn't have to be an athletic team. It just typically has been in the stories that we've had so far.
They don't even have to be engaged in official school conduct, correct?
They don't have to be engaged in official school conduct, but in order for the institution to be required to provide them the notice, and that's all that this does, is they have to have figured out that this individual is a member of that institutional community and contact that institution to say, how do I do this? The reason that that's important, it goes back to the question that Representative Wisnett and Representative Reardon were asking about what are we doing to prevent these things from happening in the first place. And if you have a person on a campus who is in the midst of a sexual assault investigation, you want to know that as a campus, and that's against your campus disciplinary code to do that. So this ensures that the institution is getting that information as well if that victim is coming forward. The way that it will work in practical terms, it's very unlikely that somebody, when they are enrolled and on a vacation somewhere and they assault someone, that victim, one, is going to go through the process. Two, is going to go to the trouble to figure out what the institution is and contact them in another state. But if they do, we want them to have access to this piece of paper, and that's all that it requires.
So again, to get to the end of your statement there, if all of those things did happen, the ultimate effect of the bill is to be notified of the protocol, and
right.
And that's the end.
Right. So if I made that contact to Oregon State University, for instance, they would be able to comply with this law by saying, okay, this is our protocol, and they could send me an email that has the link to where they posted it on the website. And then their obligations under this bill have been satisfied.
So we've heard from OSU, but I'd be interested to hear from, I guess, the other institutions as well about how they would respond to the dashboards, I think, Mr. Chair, if there's a way to know
that. I'm not sure who is in the audience to be prepared to represent. I see some folks from PSU. Whoever's the right person, would you be willing to come forward and provide your reactions to the dashboards, please?
Sure. Well, they're coming
Eastern
up.
Yes,
Representative Gallegos, please.
Yeah, I would just comment that, I mean, this kind of protection would also apply clearly, I mean, even with foreign studies students. I mean, I would teach in Salzburg in summer courses and with the foreign studies program, and I mean, one cannot appreciate how vulnerable students are in some of those foreign studies programs. So this, again, would be extremely valuable.
Thank you, Chair.
I'm sorry.
Whomever wants to go first is fine with me.
Mary Moeller, Director of Local and Federal Government Relations with Portland State University. And we have here Julie Karen, the Title IX Coordinator with Portland State University. I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
I'm putting words in Representative Johnson's mouth, so he can certainly correct me. But I think the general question is how you react to the Dash 4.
We're really pleased with Senator Gelser's intent and the information that she provided us. So we feel that if the intent is there to make sure that it's notification, that we are happy to move forward.
Ms. Karen, anything to add?
Yes, thank you. Like Mary said, we support
the bill. I'm sorry, if you could identify yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm Julie Karen, Title IX Coordinator. Thank you, Chairman Reed. I represent all the Title IX coordinators. We get together on a quarterly basis, and we do support the bill, and we think it's important for victims to be notified of their resources and services. All universities are doing this now, either through their websites or handouts. Students are obtaining the information through in-person trainings, pre-orientation, at orientation, post-orientation in their freshman inquiry courses, as well as being required to take learning modules. In regard to the Dash 4 with the notification when something occurs potentially off campus, the university would do their best to be able to would clearly inform individuals of the protocol that would be occurring in order to do an internal investigation of whether there is conduct that violates either the student code of conduct or the university's discrimination and harassment policies. For student conduct issues, it does not matter whether or not a student assaults an individual off campus. Those issues, the universities are required to look into whether or not it's perpetrated against a student or a non-victim. In regard to faculty or staff, that's a little bit more of a delicate issue, and each university will have their own procedures. But we would definitely be able to let victims know of our protocol of looking into those matters. It clearly might depend on whether it was on a university activity. And we would be able to do our best effort to let them know of their services and resources available to individuals. I mean, if something was to occur in a foreign country, that might be more difficult to let them know what that foreign country's resources are. But the university would make all the intentions to support the victim because we know of how important it is for victims to feel in control of the situations.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, does that cover your question?
That helps. That's PSU, but we have...
Well, although, Ms. Karen, I think I heard you say you're representing the other Title IX coordinators at the other universities?
That's correct. We meet on a quarterly basis, and I haven't conferred with them on Dash 4 with everybody, but we have conferred on the bill and are in complete support of it, knowing that it's important and required of universities through Title IX to give individuals notification.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, if I may, with the Dash 4s going through that fiscal process, all of the institutional campuses are aware of this amendment. I know there was significant conversation yesterday and the day before. I was part of that conversation. I'm particularly grateful to Mary and Debbie Koreski for their work in kind of facilitating those conversations. But there is not, I do not believe it is possible for any of our institutions to be not aware of this A4 amendment, and nobody has expressed opposition to it.
Yeah, of course, we have 17 community colleges here. I wonder if John Wyckoff has any.
Fine, we can ask him up as well. Ms. Muller, Ms. Karen, if you might stay
for just a moment,
in case, as the expert that you are, that would be
questions.
Great. Thanks, Ms. Muller. Mr. Wyckoff.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff, Oregon Community College Association. And I wouldn't say anything, I think, that would be different than what our university colleagues would say. I think we, in the last couple of days, got some clarification over, I think, some of the where we were concerned that there was some broadness in the language that could lead community colleges to have to, or where we were concerned that we might be on the hook for services for folks we weren't even able to identify. But I think the intent that you heard about today clarifies that what we're really talking about is having protocol around notification, and that seems like something that the colleges are required and would continue to provide, and we appreciate Senator Gelser working with us on this.
Very good. Representative Johnson, anyone else you want?
Oh,
absolutely. No. I'm sincerely asking, is there anyone else you want we should hear from today?
There's other members.
Okay. Anyone else? Representative Nierman.
Good. I'll jump on the due diligence bandwagon here. So, Senator Gelser, in the Dash 4s on Section A there, it says when a sexual assault is reported. What does that mean to report a sexual assault? So does that mean to report it to the police? Does it mean to report it to my dorm resident advisor? Does it mean to report it to the Title IX coordinator? What does that mean?
Chair Reed, Representative Nierman, that means to report it to the university, and what that means for each institution is going to be contained within that protocol that they adopt. So they are going to adopt a protocol that says, and they're going to provide it, thanks to the good work of this committee at orientation, it will be on the website, to know, I want to report this to the university. Who do I call? One of the other things that we followed up on, and we talked with the Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force about this last week, we want to make sure that part of that notification, people know who they can make that anonymous report to, that doesn't require things being reported beyond a place that victim wants them to be reported. All of that can also be part of this, part of the protocol, but the protocol will define that.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wisnett. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just add a comment. I had the fine ladies from PSU talk to me yesterday, I think. We went over the procedures that all the universities have. The one thing that, and I'll not propose it as an amendment, but I want to be sure that the universities in their written protocol, PSU was saying it went to a certain level of dean level. I think the president, there's not that many. The president should also be infoed. He's not going to be doing the investigation, but I think that the president of that university should know that this has been reported. So I hope the protocols in the universities have several represented here today that the protocol will say also the head guy is notified that there's been a report or something. So.
Thank you, Representative Wisnett. Anything else? So we have the Dash 4 amendments, and we're in work session. Committee, what's your pleasure? Representative Gallegos?
Chair Reed, I move to adopt the Dash 4 A4 amendment stated May 11th, 2015.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved the Dash A4 amendments from May 11th, 2015. Is there a discussion?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Wisnett.
I think some of the members are concerned, but we're not going to move the bill. We're just going to put the amendments in today because we don't have the paperwork. Is that true?
We have the paperwork. We can move forward. I'm satisfied with the testimony from the institutions. So let's adopt the amendment, and then we'll have that discussion if you're okay with that. Are there any objections to the motion?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So we were talking about the dash threes. Were the dash threes incorporated into the dash fours?
Dash fours, as I understand, I'm happy to be corrected, are the combination of the twos and the threes.
Okay.
Getting nods from Senator Gelser.
Okay. And we had, Mr. Chair, we had drafted those just so we could price them separately to make sure that we weren't.
Okay. So again, the motion is to adopt the dash A4 amendments. Is there any objection to that motion? I don't see any. So the dash A4 amendments are adopted. And we're now in work session. Having the amendments adopted, Representative Wisnant, I'll say for myself, I'm satisfied given the testimony we've heard today with moving forward. It sounds like you are less so.
I just think because, again, I think everyone on the committee, there's no doubt we support it. Just trying to be sure that we've covered all the bases. It's not going to hurt to wait. Well, when would we meet again?
We'll meet next Wednesday. Do we have a Monday or Wednesday? I mean, there's time. I can't remember at this exact moment when our next meeting is, but there's certainly time. We're not nearing the deadlines for Senate bills. We have so many other Senate bills.
Yeah, I hope the senator will appreciate it.
Well,
we want to wait.
Mr. Chair, I would respectfully ask if you're comfortable with this bill and support that notification going to these victims that you moved the bill today. It is part of a bill package. Its companion bill is coming out of the Senate Judiciary Committee today, and we've been trying to time these two pieces, that privilege piece, together to move them forward and keep them together. So delaying this until next week would kind of undo that timing work. I would just put forward that we've done the due diligence in working with the institutions. You've heard from the institutions that they are supportive of this. The amendments that we've put into the bill are the amendments that were requested by the committee last week, and I hope that it can earn your support. And we've worked all session to keep these two bills together. It would be nice to be able to do that, be able to keep them together till the end.
Representative Wisnant, I'm going to look to you on that. I don't want to push the committee to be doing something that the committee is uncomfortable with. I appreciate what you said, Senator Gelser. It won't be any less a law if it passes a little bit later, but I appreciate your point about wanting to keep them together. So I want to see what your reaction is to that, Representative Wisnant.
Mr. Chair, can I request a recess mm-hmm. to confer with my caucus?
Sure. We'll stand at ease for a moment. Committee will come back to order. Representative Wisnant?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the break there to talk. We're behind this. I mean, everyone wants to be sure that this doesn't happen, that the victim of any sexual abuse is knows what to do, and the testimony we had was very, you know, scary, I guess is the word. I think the universities, they have some plans. I hope that this will help further. Our concern that we were concerned about liability to the universities, but the universities have not said they are concerned about that, so we will support the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Gallegos, I think we're ready for a motion.
Sure.
Did you want to say something?
Chair Reed, I move Senate Bill 759 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos has moved Senate Bill 759 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I know there's some discussion. Representative Hayden?
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm going to support this. I think it's a good idea because I see it as something that will bring some uniformity to the universities and how they do that. Having said that, I also want to talk and having talked to some of the universities, there's a lot of people and a lot of staff, whether it's Title IX or human resources, that are in these universities now doing a lot of work on this, and I want to make sure that they get credit for that, and if we can help uniform that for the universities, I think that's a good thing. But I don't want to kind of, you know, just the concern is it almost appears like the universities aren't doing anything now currently, and I think there is a lot of groundwork that's already being done, and I want to support that.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Representative Hayden. In fact, we have been talking about an informational hearing on that more broad issue in some of our remaining time. So I think you make a good point, and we'll likely have a chance for more discussion of that later on. Other discussion on the motion? Are there any objections to the motion? I don't see any of the motion carries. Bill 759, as amended, heads to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Williamson, would you carry?
Yes,
she
Mr.
will.
Chair.
So thank you. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 759. And thank you for your patience. We'll now head to our informational hearing on the experiences at Southern and Eastern. We have several people to testify, and if three chairs here, we can do some more, but it seems to me two and three might make sense. Mr. President, would you like to join us and kick us off? President Kenton, President Sago? I know you can correct me if I've got the sequence out of order here, but certainly want to make sure you guys get the first word. And as they get settled, Representative Johnson, you were part of the inspiration for this hearing. Are there any opening comments you'd like to make?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Committee members, we've had a chance on this committee to watch kind of the evolution of our universities over the last, I guess, 5 years that I've been on this committee now. And one of the processes that a couple of them have gone through is called retrenchment. And both Eastern and Southern have embarked on this journey, which basically, I think, gives the university a chance to push the reset button and retool and redefine what their mission is to tighten their belts and so forth, but just get a chance to reevaluate who they are and are they, in fact, on the course that they think is in the best interest of their students and in their communities that they serve and so forth. So I thought it would be a very interesting process for us today, an informational hearing, to be able to just hear from them about what circumstances led up to the retrenchment process, how that actually played out at each university, and perhaps now how are they equipped and prepared differently to go forward into the future. So I hope we can have a great discussion, and appreciate them coming all this way to be here with us today. So thank you, Mr. President.
Thanks for the introduction, Representative Johnson. Mr. President, consider us your class for today, please.
You want us to go first? I have my team with me.
You're welcome to.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to let Southern go first.
Okay. Okay. That's perfectly fine. That's what I was kind of debating, trying to figure out. Well, do we want the presidents? Do we want university by university? So please go ahead, Mr. Southern President.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. For the record, my name is Roy Saigo. I'm president of Southern Oregon University, and thank you so much for this committee to give us the opportunity to talk to you all. We have our first slide. And this is a thumbnail sketch, Chair Reed, of who we are. And in a nutshell, we educate about 6,000 students per year. We have about 1,000 degrees that are conferred, and most of our students are undergraduates. Large number, 71% are residents, about 18% minorities, and that 70% of our graduates remain in Oregon. And we'll be really quick about this, and if you have questions, please feel free to ask. We'll go on to Vice President Morris.
Yes, good morning, Chair Reed. For the record, my name is Craig Morris. I'm the Vice President of Finance and Administration.
You could point the microphone just a little bit toward you.
Yes,
it does
I
not
will.
Need to be very close,
okay.
But just point
Thank
in the direction would be great. Thanks.
So about 2.5 years ago, SOU realized that the changing landscape of higher education would compel us to look at reorganizing, restructuring, repositioning, rethinking our institution. So we invoked or enlisted a series of pretty comprehensive analyses and studies to help collect data and inform us about where we were at and where we needed to go. And then a series of events occurred that I'm going to describe to you. In spring of 2013, the Oregon University System made a decision to adopt a new accounting policy around the recording of bad debt write-off and the recording of the associated reserves. And that applied to all seven institutions. And for SOU, it required us to make a transfer of a little more than $2 million from our general fund operating budget to a restricted reserve fund. That transaction caused our general fund fund balance to drop below the minimum standard of 5% of operating revenues, and that standard set by the board, and invoked a board rule requiring us to develop a plan to get to a 10% or better fund balance position and report that to the board. So we started that work in the subsequent summer, and then in the fall of 13, we had our second year in a row of enrollment decline, and we were also at that time projecting that the next year, which was this year, would be down yet again 2.6%. I'm happy to report to you that that was not the case, and that we're up slightly in headcount. So there's that good news. But at that time, things did look like they would be down. So that, coupled with the current biennium's continued decrease in state allocation, created a bit of a perfect storm for SOU. And so in November, the president decided to announce that we would go into retrenchment. Now, the good news in all of this is that these analyses and studies that we had done created a very rich portfolio of data, and this data was able to inform our decision-making as we developed the retrenchment plan, and we identified savings substantially coming out of academic reorganization and the elimination of academic programs and the subsequent elimination of faculty associated with those programs. But we identified $6.2 million in permanent decreases and $7.2 million in one-time savings.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Susan Walsh. I'm Provost and Vice President for Academic and Student Affairs at Southern Oregon University.
And Ms. Walsh, if you could just move the microphone further away from you.
A little bit further.
It won't distort.
I resonate,
perfect.
So
yes.
I'm
well done.
I'm trouble.
That's great. It's all good.
It's all that public speaking experience.
There you go.
Vice President Morris mentioned the academic reorganization, and I think on the slide we have a couple of points that if you have questions about, I'm happy to answer. But going to the retrenchment process, this comes directly out of the collective bargaining agreement for the faculty. Article 11 states the process through which retrenchment is declared. A provisional plan is developed. There are opportunities for input and feedback and comment periods before the final plan is released. And you can sort of see the timeline from November to March, at which point the final plan was released. And I believe you have the copy of the final plan in your possession. Thank you.
So the State Board of Higher Education wanted to develop a set of metrics for SOU so that they could follow the implementation of our retrenchment plan. Our retrenchment plan achieves the long-term goals that we want to achieve financially by 2017-18. And so the board wanted to be sure that there was some way to be able to follow how that implementation was going. So a series of very comprehensive set of metrics have been developed. Actually, if I showed you all those metrics, it would be five pages of spreadsheets to show you. And these metrics are broken up into quarters. So each quarter, we know the benchmark that we should be achieving in a whole series of different metrics. These metrics are reported up to OUS, the Oregon University System, and to the board. And as they dissolve in the next 6 weeks, that responsibility will move over to the HEC, and we will be reporting our progress to the HEC in December of 2015 and then again in December of 2017. Now, we recently reported our performance to these metrics to the State Board of Higher Education at their last meeting, and we were pleased to let them know that in all of the metrics, SOU was meeting and in most cases exceeding where we were supposed to be at this time.
The overview of institutional situation. I came to Southern Oregon University in July of 2014. The campus was down. We had a malaise. We had no confidence vote, and things were not looking very positively. I felt that we needed to make sure that all units of the campus were involved. I visited from horticultural groups, landscaping, faculty, every division. Susan and I would meet with the faculty, and it was apparent that we had to regain the trust of the entire university. I think a lot of that worked. We even met with the landscape group and the custodians. We met at 10 o'clock, and they were wondering why I was meeting with them. But you all know that these folks work in the afternoon and evenings, and if they don't do their work, we certainly will know that during the day. To be familiar, men are kind of grubby. Women are pretty fastidious. I know my family, the women folk, if the bathrooms were dirty, they would not return and would never know why. That's how important all aspects of the university are important for enrollment. We were restructuring the university, and as Provost Walsh talked, the flattened levels from deans to division leaders created an opportunity to improve communication and working together in a very complex university. She and Associate Vice President Karen Stone looked at all of the curricular offerings. We reduced in 1 year the number of courses that had fewer than 10 students by 50%. Quality, accountability, and making sure that we were always in the black rather than red. The physical plant was exciting because the science group moved from their science building to a dormitory. In that time, this allowed the remodeling people to go in and really work hard. And this fall, in 14 months, I feel that we should be able to move into a new STEM building. The physical education facilities are going to be breaking ground this summer, and we are already looking at three-dimensional architectural drawings for our theater remodeling, and we have even talked to the JPR, Jefferson Public Radio, about developing, along with that, a new facility for them. As I talked about landscaping, when new people come in, we have new eyes. This is our home. And I walked around and I found that there was not much care. The landscape was dying. Leaves were flown all over. And the thing that affected me the most is when we got on campus the first day, we saw a map. And another family came in and asked my wife where such and such a building was. And she said, well, here, there's a big map here. Let's look. And we went to look, and there was no "you are here" arrow on that map. You know, this is our home, and we need to be proud of it. I looked at the benches, and this may not sound very important. The benches were neglected, there was a board missing, and if you had sat down on it, you would have been left with an impression that you would not like. We have refurbished that, we have painted it, and that is the entrance of our university. It's got to be well-kept, welcoming, and making sure that people want to enter and remain. Again, we looked at the relationships. I've always felt that you have to respect and communicate completely with the community colleges and high schools. I visited all the area high schools, making sure that the superintendents of the schools feel welcome and their students were welcome on our campus. The CCs are extremely important to us, and that you can have 100 signed agreements, but unless you have a personal relationship with those individuals, you will not make any inroad into making sure that their transfer students are welcome on our campus. And so we have done that with all the area high schools. The next slide you will see, I am very, very proud. If you look in the 03, the retention rate was down 62%. That means 40% are leaving or dropping out and going to other institutions. We have new metrics that graduation is important on getting funding for our institution. We have gone to 67 and 12 and starting to go up to 73, and in 14 we're up to 75%. We are talking about every faculty member treating every student as if he or she is our own. And that high touch, high retention rate will then come as a result of treating every student as if he or she is our very own. This next slide, I am really proud of. It makes me smile because if you look, in the fall of 13, we had 3,775 applications. In 14, last year, we had 3,961. And remember, I used to play baseball, and this is early. This is about the fourth or fifth inning out of nine, all right? But in 2015, we have already 3,648 applications. We're up almost 300 to 400 beyond what we were a year ago. The freshman class, you'll notice in 2815, this is another advancement from 2014. Last year, our freshman class broke a 10-year record. That's the first, forgive me, pig in the python. This second year, as we go, if that continues, we'll have another large influx of freshmen. These are things that will carry on from this year for 4 to 6 years hence. It's very important to replenish the 1,000 students that we graduate per year. You'll notice the transfers. I think that our relationships with the CCs and other schools are beginning to produce fruit. We are starting to see a separation from what they were a year ago. Long-term financial viability. You know, enrollment is the lifeblood of our institution. It's a lot cheaper to keep students, so retention also is very important, and heck, requires us to have graduation rates as a part of our reimbursement. This is a culture change for Southern Oregon University. This is an all-out effort by all aspects, not only staff, but our faculty, to treat every student as if he or she is our own. We have brought in others like athletics and men's soccer. We have our first African-American coach. This will bring in about 35 to 45 new students. These are will encourage many minorities to attend. And the other that will excite you would be women's wrestling. Believe me, folks, I didn't believe it when they told me we have 1,000 women wrestlers from Northern California to the south border of Canada willing to come to our institution. We've had top students who would go otherwise have signed an agreement to come to Southern Oregon University. Sports band, we know that musicians have higher grade points. They persist. They have an esprit de corps. They bring a wonderful spirit to the campus, and this will bring another 45 to 50 students. Honors inclusion. In the past, we've had 25 honors per year. And I said, well, how many applicants do you get? 100 to 125. What do you do with those? Well, we say, I'm sorry, you did not make it. This year, the next 30 to 40, we said, all right, 25 got it. The next 25 to 30, we're going to offer you a sweetened, another reduction in tuition. We want you because you're very good. Out of the 34 calls, we got 33 to commit to Southern Oregon University. So not only do we have an honors program, we also have other good students who are wanting to come. We are following through with retrenchment. We heard that from Vice President Morris. We are ahead of the game. We're in the black on that. Provost Walsh will tell you every division of our campus on faculty have reinvestment in areas of growth. We have plans from 1 to 3 years for that. We have the physical growth, the STEM, theater, physical education, and we are looking at theater and, of course, JPR. Shared governance. Susan and I and others have worked very, very closely with the faculty. Without faculty, you can say, follow me, and nobody will follow. You've got to have involvement, buy-in, and respect, and a transparent administration in order to get the institution to move from here to there. We need to empower the faculty again to be creative, to increase their appreciation. Remember, Oregon Shakespeare Festival was created by a Southern Oregon University faculty member named Balmer. This is where we have to go back to. We need to help our faculty be more creative, more scholarly, and teach our students. We are currently number one in the Director's Cup of the NAIA. Well, last year we were 32. Set the bar high, get buy-in, support Endeavor, and be successful. Let me share with you just a few words that I said with the athletic department. I met with about 30 coaches and physical therapists, and I said, you know what? I don't have much to say, but I'm going to tell you, I hope you listen closely. I want every one of you coaches to win every game. That's what we're doing at Southern Oregon University. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Southern Oregon folks? Representative Nierman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, President Saigo, so the retrenchment, I understand that Southern had other problems, but to the extent that the problems at Southern were caused by the recession, what could you do about that, and what could you do to make sure that that doesn't happen in a future recession or something like that? I guess I'm talking about the fact that when you have a recession, you have a bunch of students, all of a sudden you get a glut of students, and then as soon as we start to come out of the recession, then those students go away. How could you better plan for that, or is that not a problem? I guess I'll second guess myself first.
Chair Reed, Congressman Nierman.
Thanks for the
not
promotion
yet.
There.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's always a slippery slope on a lot of these occasions, but I feel that the plan that we have put in place by being more efficient on our classes, not having a number of low-enrolled classes, some reassigned time that we could not afford, increasing retention that we did not have before, bringing in these teams and honors programs, it creates an esprit de corps, I feel, that we did not have before. By being high touch, that's one thing that will retain students. And also, I always believe, and we have no money for extra publicity, billboards, TV, newspapers, but the thing that I feel is the most important publicity for Southern Oregon University are for our students to go home to Talent, to Grants Pass, to Eugene, anywhere, and say, you know what? SOU is much better than I ever expected, and you need to consider going there. When any student says that to their colleagues in high school, you're going to gain 10 more students. And I believe that I spoke to the OIT people. They had done a research. For every student athlete that comes to your university, you also attract one and one half. So I'm hopeful that by being very frugal in our finances, being high touch and treating every student as if he or she is our own, having high quality and supporting our faculty, that this institution is poised to be very successful in the future. Thank you.
So Chair Reed and please. Representative Nierman, if I can just add to that, when we went into this retrenchment process, and before we did this accounting entry that I described, we were projected to close fiscal year 13 with a fund balance of around 6% of operating revenues, which is within the 5 to 15% range set by the State Board of Higher Education, but at the low end of that. Our retrenchment plan gets us by 17-18 to almost a 12% ending fund balance, so double those reserves. So there's our hedge against the next recession, is having adequate reserves to be able to weather those kinds of storms. So I feel like we're positioning ourselves in the way that Dr. Saigo just described, and those are the numbers behind that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, y'all, for being here. Great presentation. You talked about how you looked at student populations in certain courses as one of the litmus tests, i.e. whether you were going to try to scale back or not offer those courses. But could you talk about majors? I didn't know if you touched on that. Were there areas of major emphasis that you eliminated because they no longer fit the mission or the scope and the vision of the university going forward?
Thank you, Chair Reed. Representative Johnson, yes, we actually did eliminate majors. One example is physics, which really served as a pre-major major. We graduated two or three students every year or so. Many of those would take introductory courses and then transfer out. So those were the sort of microscopic views that we took for majors. We reduced several majors so that we have first and second year programs versus 4-year programs in those particular areas. So we tried to be very strategic, and we're teaching out, for example, physics in the next this year and next year, so that students would be able to graduate with the majors that they enrolled in.
Okay, one more quick follow-up. How's the faculty morale now? Obviously, this has been a pretty traumatic time for them. So, yeah. And what means have you used to try to boost that and to build that team with the faculty?
A lot of parking lot conversations.
Seriously,
a lot of one-on-one time. I think President Saigo's arrival really energized the faculty. He spent a lot of face time with the faculty, and I took that opportunity to do so as well. I come from the faculty, so I have, you know, long-held relationships with many of the folks. I think morale is on the way up significantly. We're probably not there. Mm-hmm. We're heading into, you know, a faculty bargaining session, and there are other things that can always be factors. But I think, all in all, we're there, just about there.
Thank you. Question.
Representative Wisnett and then Representative Reardon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Congratulations on your recovery.
Thank you.
Is the final entrenchment plan online?
Yes.
So we can get that online?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
second, Mr. Chair.
Please.
One of the reasons that Representative Johnson and I sort of support him in asking for this presentation is we want to know, did the legislature have any laws that hindered you in doing what you need to do, or do we need legislation to help you do what you did? So could you comment on that? And also, so I have to go back to the chair again.
Yeah, you never know what you might.
It seems like the Article 11 was significant for you. And is that each university has their own agreement. So is there something in your bargaining agreement that was good, bad, or anything that the state could say, we want this in bargaining agreements to provide the rescue or the actions that you took?
And that's a preview for a question to President Kenton as well, too. I imagine you want to say the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I can speak from my vantage point and say that the faculty control the process, the retrenchment process. It's very fast, and the opportunity to weigh in and make meaningful decisions based on a relatively short time frame is challenging. And in relation to the final product, I'm very pleased with the final plan. I feel very confident that it's a good plan and that it serves us well. But I think that the process is very quick, and I wonder sometimes if we need to have a little more time to really consider the decisions more carefully.
Yeah. So if I could add to that, so there's good and bad in this article, and I think that Dr. Walsh has described what the challenge is. But, you know, on the positive side, it requires this planning around retrenchment, and I certainly hope that we never have to do it again, to be extremely transparent and very engaging of the faculty and the staff and the community. And that's a real positive thing. So at the end of the day, when the final plan came out, there might have been some people who's like, well, I don't like the outcome. But they couldn't complain that they didn't have an opportunity to be a part of the discussion that developed that final plan. So there's the positive side of that.
That's a standard to which we aspire here as well.
Yes.
Let me make a comment.
Please.
I'm going to take this report and send it to Dr. Johnson in Bend to be sure that, you know, it's a great opportunity. We're building a four-year university in Bend, and that doesn't happen long, but you have to look at what happened here. And I've been involved in building a church, and in that building that church, we were told, you know, you don't build a church for Easter Sunday crowd. And so I think we always have to, anytime we're building a facility, we have to think about that. I don't think that from my experience in the legislature, the demographics were going to be smaller and smaller. We're going to have more adults maybe coming back to college and stuff like that. But I think we're all going to see a decrease. The recession gave us the increases, but I'm proud of the leadership here, and I think you guys will not only have a great football team in the future, but you're going to get your financial. So, and again, this was asked to help, you know, to see if we needed legislation. You're an independent sort of, definitely independent now in Oregon, but we want to be sure that we're not hindering whatever you have to do to stay healthy. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Wisnett. Representative Reardon.
Well, when I heard the term retrenchment, it sounded like this horrible thing that's happening, and the results are just so incredible. This is going to be either a hard question, Dr. Saigo, to answer, or incredibly easy, but could you briefly, I'm so impressed by you. Could you briefly summarize your leadership philosophy?
I think your description of that question was apt. Easy or hard?
Chair Reed, Representative Reardon, thank you so much for that question. This is my third presidency. I was chancellor at Auburn University in Montgomery, Alabama, and I was going to retire there and went to St. Cloud State University. They were down 200 students. That was $1.4 million. We turned it back up. It went up to 18. Unfortunately, it's back down. Southern Oregon University was coming home for my wife and I. She's an Oregonian. I'm an Oregon State graduate. I owe my entire career and life to Oregon. I've been fortunate in coming to such a wonderful state and city. And the thing that I am most impressed is that my staff is as good a staff as I have ever had in my whole career. These folks work 24/7. They are dedicated to the institution. And I will tell you, often they argue with me. I don't know all the answers, and that's why I have these folks here with me. But they have bought in to leadership, of collaborating with the faculty and staff. I have spoken to four Rotaries and all the chambers. I take tickets to football games and to the theater and give them to members of the community, because I had two older women come to me and said, Dr. Saigo, I've never been to a football game, but I'm coming. Every time we pick up one or two community people, that supports the university. And just like we're talking about church, you get one or two people to go to church and talk to everybody, you're going to hit 100 people. And all I want you to say is SOU is on the move again. They are positive, and they're going to take care of your children as if the child is your own. What more can you ask of us? And so my leadership style is get the best people that you can have, allow them to argue, and sometimes we get pretty heated, let me tell you. But I appreciate that, because without that degree of honesty, we cannot move forward. Faculty have the same initiative, and together. You know, I remember when I was in ROTC, second lieutenant goes over the hill and say, follow me, and you have nobody following. You may have the finest ideas in the world, but unless you have a staff to support it, you're never going to get to where you need to be. This takes more time and effort, and sometimes I don't have much hair now. It's starting to go quickly, and it used to be black when I came to Ashland, but I'll tell you, it's starting to move forward. So thank you very much. It's these folks that are making it happen. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Representative Gagos.
Again, I want to thank you for the presentation. I just want to state how critical your institution is for that area and just for our whole state in terms of moving toward our 40-40-20 goals, our workforce goals, our innovation goals. I mean, we really are looking to these institutions to really be the tool that'll get us there.
Absolutely.
I guess the question I do have, though, and a little bit of concern, is the number of faculty that you had to let go. The number, I think, was 60?
60 FTE.
Yeah, 60 FTE. And I don't imagine that what was that, maybe 25% of your faculty?
Well, that includes adjunct faculty as well. So
I guess that's getting to my question. Did you replace a lot of those full-time faculty or part-time faculty with adjuncts? And what's your plan to sort of get back to where you need to be with faculty?
Thank you for the question, Representative Gallegos. Chair Reed, that's a great question, and we talk about that quite a bit.
We do.
We've asked the academic divisions to create 3 to 5 year plans, and then more immediately 1 to 3 year plans for reinvestment purposes, so that we can be nimble. So we have some short term and long term investments that we need to look at where it makes sense. I have to tell you that we grew our curriculum, but we never cut it. And so this was a much needed downsizing at Southern Oregon University. I, like you, want to be sure that we can serve our students. As enrollments grow, we must have faculty, and we can't do it with adjuncts. So it's a very good question, and it's at the forefront of my thoughts.
Thanks. One quick question, then. I'm looking at the clock, and I want to make sure we hear from Eastern Oregon as well. Dr. Saigo, it seems like my impression might be wrong, but that it may be relatively unusual for a new president to come in the midst of a retrenchment process. Did that cause you to have any particular observations or how you might do things differently if you were there at the beginning? What was your impression coming in amidst the retrenchment process already underway?
I think all institutions are evolving at different rates. Uh-huh. And this is not any different than when I went to Southeast Louisiana. Their enrollments were down. They got rid of football. When they thought that if they got rid of football, they'd save money. But not only did they lose the 100 students, they lost about 2.5 times because of the girlfriends and friends that left. At Auburn, it was the same. They sat up on a hill and said, you know, you all come. And not many people came. So I visited high schools. At St. Cloud State, we were down. And we energized, we replenished our feeder systems. The two-year schools were pleased that we had reconnected. And it's the same here.
Okay.
And so this has been going on very well. In 10 months, we turned the thing around because of my staff and people getting their backs into it. I'd like to add one more thing, if I may.
Sure.
Chair Reed. Last week, we had 1,000 seventh graders from the Big Idea, the United Way. And there were seventh graders, you know, you can run the whole school for a year on their energy. And
That's great.
The students, by the time they ended, I had emails this morning saying, I wish we could have stayed. They had so much fun. They want to come back. We're investing in the future. This does not mean that they're going to come to Southern Oregon University, but we want them to go everywhere. I met with the Latina group. I met with the Cesar Chavez, 350 juniors and seniors, and I told the folks, you know what? Right now, this moment, I want you to make up your mind that you're going to a university someplace. I says, 50 years ago, I was in your shoes. My mother was a domestic, my father was a laborer, and thank goodness for public education, I am where I am. And in 30, 40 years, you can be in my shoes. You need to make up that decision right now and go to university. Change your life in this state forever. So that's what we're trying to push. We're going to be a big part of Southern Oregon. And if we do what we're planning to do, we'll be the finest university in the Northwest. Thank you.
That's a great note to end on. Thank you very much for being here, all three of you. We appreciate it. President Kenton, a tough act to follow. And I apologize for the relatively short time. While you're getting settled, we would also, Salam Noor, if you'd like to join us as well, please.
And are you scheduled in at 10 just so?
We are, yes.
Okay, thank you. Chairman Reed, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jay Kenton. I'm the interim president at Eastern Oregon University. I'm happy to report we just hired a president yesterday.
Yeah.
His name is Tom Insko. Tom is a non-traditional president. He has been the inland manager for Boise Cascade and one of the people in line to become the CEO of Boise Cascade. Okay. He is a graduate of Eastern Oregon University with 2 degrees and then has an MBA from William & Mary. He is a person that I personally recommended to the search committee. He's a person that grew up in the Grand Ronde Valley and somebody that I think will be a long-term leader for the institution, and I look forward to many good things under Tom's leadership. So
that's great news. Thanks for sharing.
I took a little different approach. I wanted to talk, and this may get to Representative Wisnett's question earlier, but yeah, I wanted to talk to you about Senate Bill 270 and what it's really done. And when you think about a system, I worked in the system office as CFO for 10 years, and we were a $3 billion organization of 7 universities. So one of the things an auditor does when they come in is they do a level of materiality. And, you know, so 1% of $3 billion is $30 million. And usually things under about 1 to 1.5% are immaterial. Well, Eastern Oregon University is a $50 million organization, and in many ways was being overlooked in audits, was not being scrutinized, was not having the same level of review that many of the larger universities were. In addition, the board hired and fired 7 presidents, looked out over the entire state of very different institutions, land grants, research institutions, teaching institutions, etc. So, and had limited familiarity. And while it was an acceptable governance structure, I don't think it was focused. And I think it allowed some things to happen at Eastern, Southern, maybe other places that would not have happened with a different model. So my next slide talks about the new model under Senate Bill 270 with audit materiality levels. When they come to Eastern, if we're $50 million, 1% of that, I believe, is about $500,000. I mean, they're going to scrutinize our transactions. In fact, we're just now getting bids to have auditors audit our books. And the cost won't go down that much from what the system paid, because they're going to look at a lot more of our transactions. They're going to scrutinize them. They're going to ask questions about them. And that's a good thing. That should be reassuring to people like yourselves and other stewards of the institution. So I think we're going to have what I call intense accountability, enhanced stewardship, awesome advocacy. Our board are awesome advocates. They are people from the region. Many of them have connections to the institution. You will be hearing from them. Senator Nelson is our chair of our board. And, you know, so I think it's a much more effective governance model. And I wanted to thank you as a group for your work in passing those bills. I know it wasn't difficult. I was part of the system. You never like to be changed, especially eliminated. But I think you did the right thing for Oregon and for these institutions. So the OUS board is in the process of writing a report that they will hand off to the HEC at June 30th, I believe. And they asked me to do a situation analysis, kind of SWOT, et cetera. So I'm just going to walk you through very quickly because I know time is of the essence here. You know, strengths, we're affordable. We have multimodal educational delivery. We do on-campus, online, and on-site instruction. We're at 10 community colleges around the state. About 50% of our students are online. Many of them aren't even in the state. I mean, we have students in St. Augustine, Florida, and places like that. We have smaller classes, et cetera. Those are our strengths. Weaknesses, leadership is changing again. And I want to talk to you about this. You know, I went back to 2000 and looked at the last 15 years. Eastern has had 5 different presidents and 6 presidential transitions. 1 interim, Dixie Lund did it twice. We've had 6 VPs of finance. We've had 6 provosts. We've had 8 deans of the College of Arts and Sciences. And that, in my opinion, has been a large part of the institution's problem. When you have that kind of leadership, you're losing those relationships, you're losing that institutional history, et cetera. And that was one of the reasons why I nominated Tom Inskoe for the job. He's from LeGrand. He's probably roughly 45 years old. I think he could be a 15 to 20 year president. And that stability is very important. Obviously, we're in a rural area, and you know, we have limited reserves right now, which are challenging, and a very low-income student body. Opportunities, you know, we have multiple opportunities to change our curriculum. The economy of Eastern Oregon is changing. It's very depressed. We are losing many of our young families. They are leaving rural areas to go to cities to get a job. And, you know, the demographics are changing. We're becoming very Latino in Eastern Oregon. In fact, you know, if you look in areas like Ontario and Malheur County, if you look at Hermiston and Western Umatilla County, Morrow County, you'll find K through 12 populations that are above 50% Latino. It is part of our culture, part of our future, and it's a real opportunity, I think, for the institution to reach out to those populations. I think the governance structure, as I said before, is much more robust. And I also think Tom, being a businessman coming out of Boise Cascade, will understand economic development better. And he understands the people in the region. He knows the players and will be able to help forge that new economy for Eastern Oregon. We do have threats. The improving economy, you know, our enrollment is countercyclical. In a recession, our enrollment goes up. In an improving economy, it goes down. State funding continues to be a challenge, although we thank you for every dollar you give us. You know, ever since the passage of Ballot Measure 5, I think, you know, you've been hamstrung in what you can provide to higher education. Competition's an issue, and the cost of the governance are issues. So what have we done? We cut $4 million. The story is pretty much the same at Eastern as it was at Southern. We realigned faculty workloads. We have new systems to track faculty release time. We have greater attention to scheduling and planning for improved retention. We're improving our advising systems. Eastern didn't have a budget process when I got there, just so you know. That's important. A budget is important, and people need to be held accountable to it. And we are projecting this year to end in the black and actually add to our reserves. When I got to Eastern Oregon in May of last year, we didn't have a webmaster. And a group of young women from LeGrand High School came up to me and said, "Mr. President, respectfully, your website sucks." And it did. And, you know, and so we needed, you know, that's how people find out about things. We needed that. We didn't have a career center. There was no reason for people to stay to get help, you know, get into job because we had none. We didn't have a child development center, even though I was handed two notebooks of studies done in the last 5 years, and both suggested we needed one. Well, thanks to your approval earlier this session of the repurposing of some bonds, we will have a child care center, and it will open in September. We have a new enrollment management crew. In fact, we have a Latino woman running it and other Spanish speakers in the office as well as in the financial aid offices and other places. When I talk to Latino students, their parents many times do not speak English, and they need to understand how they can afford a college education, etc. We've increased fee remissions because we have a lot of low-income students and not robust scholarship funds like some of our larger institutions. We've contracted our bookstore. We are redoing our food services. We've started a center for rural studies for our faculty to actually help communities. In fact, I was just talking to the Ford Foundation about this yesterday to you know, help them work through this economic change, these demographic changes, et cetera. So we are realigning our curriculum to more meet the needs of the region. You know, we don't have natural resource curricula at Eastern, and yet, you know, if you pick up any book and read about rural America, it's natural resource intensive with farming, with logging, with mining, and other things like that. We need to get more in those areas as well as other areas. You know, the Grand paper just had an article about the mental health problems in Eastern Oregon and how the police are dealing with these mental health issues. I met with GOBI, the Greater Oregon Behavioral Health Organization. They have 70 vacancies in Eastern Oregon for master's level jobs in counseling and mental health, and want us to help with that. Those are good jobs that the people could be in. So that's why the counseling emphasis, some of the health care, the largest job growth in America today, etc. Eastern Promise, I just want to brag a little bit about this. This is a partnership with Blue Mountain, Treasure Valley Community Colleges, Intermountain ESD, and Malheur ESD. What we do is we bring high school students, or fifth graders rather, to campus during the year when classes are in session, and for 1 week in the summer. We work with ninth graders to create an educational plan, and we offer low-cost pre-college credits for upper division high school students. And, you know, our goal is to get them the confidence that they can go to college. And we recently had a study. This is in the third year of its operation, so it's a little early. But what Education Northwest found is, of the students that partake of this program, their attendance in high school increased significantly. meaning they weren't bored, they're coming to school, they're excited about things. We have 100% graduation rate. Anybody that took an Eastern Promise course graduated from high school. And in Eastern Oregon, our graduation rate is 80%. Statewide, I believe we're in the 60s, but we have 100% for the kids that come through this program, and we have an 8% increase in the kids that go on to college. We then had Eco Northwest, John Topanga and his group come in and evaluate the cost benefit. We had a $2.2 million grant from the Department of Education for this program for 2 years. They found there was a 27-to-1 return on the investment for that, based on those added kids going to college, those kids graduating from high school, and you know, the lifetime earnings and, you know, net present value of those funds and tax rates on those funds. We also started a new program called the Eastern Advantage. It's a 4-year tuition guarantee coupled with a 4-year graduation guarantee. We'll offer enhanced financial aid planning and counseling and assistance finding a job. Students have to obviously enroll for the requisite number of courses and maintain an acceptable GPA. But then we're adding into this, this is almost like a contract, that at the end of it, we expect you to give back to the institution. Hmm. When you get a job, we want you to donate to our foundation, to scholarship funds for future students, or to give back your time in the Alumni Association, helping to spread the word about Eastern Oregon. So in sum, we've had some problems, we are making changes, but I believe EOU is the key to the future of Eastern Oregon, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. President. Questions for President Kenton? Representative Johnson.
More just a comment, I just wanted to say thank you to President Kenton for his efforts, and I think I might be the only committee member that had a chance to work with him when he was the CFO for the OUS system, and I always very much appreciated his, well, sorry. Appreciated your integrity and the great work that you've done there. So I think you're the right person for the right time out at Eastern, and I'm really excited to work with the new president. Excited to see a private sector individual coming out there that I think will be a great shot in the arm for the economy and understanding the vital connection between public education and private sector success as well. So
thank you.
Great job.
Thank you. And I was particularly intrigued by that, too, the non-traditional route that, that brings him to it. What are you going to do when you when your presidency concludes?
Mr. Chair, I'm still on the faculty of Portland State. I will teach classes in their MPA program. I teach a required class to graduate with an MPA. And, you know, I plan to do a lot of things I haven't been able to do during a 32-year-long career and travel. You know, I have, my best friend just moved to Adelaide, Australia, and things like that. So, but I'll stay involved. I'm finishing a textbook right now in public finance for Jossie Bass that will publish that when it's done, and I'm probably two-thirds of the way into it. And I'll stay involved, do some consulting perhaps, but hunt, fish, goof off, do nothing, you know. Enjoy life.
We're not done with you yet.
Mr. President, thank you for your presentation. Thank you for your leadership there and work when you were with the University, Oregon University system. I think the main thing of Eastern Oregon, the Eastern Promise and the guaranteed tuition is great programs that we've been working with this committee and everything trying to do and your leadership in that. I think also the main thing with Eastern Oregon to stay alive is the niche you've created online and being a leader in that. And I think that's going to, other schools are going to, you know, try to pick away some of your business on that, but that's, you're leading the way in that. And I think that's going to help assure Eastern Oregon stays there. So thank you again.
Yeah, Chairman Reed, Vice Chair Wisnett, I agree with you. And in fact, I would say Eastern Oregon could have become the Southern New Hampshire, or, yeah, that's right, Southern New Hampshire of the world, had it played its cards right. I mean, I think we let the rest of the world catch up with us. We were way ahead in the late 90s, early part of this new century. And, you know, now the world's kind of caught up, but it is a niche. And, you know, we serve, this will sound kind of funny, probably roughly two-thirds of the geography of Oregon. It frankly only has a very small percent of the population. But there are a lot of place-bound people, mothers that are living in John Day raising children or working adults living around the country that would not be able to finish their education without those online opportunities.
Thank you.
Mr. Nouri, you've been very patient. I'm sorry we're nearing the end, but we definitely want to hear from you as well. Please.
That's right. I will be brief. Good morning, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, Salam Noor with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. And I am here really representing the HEC and presenting a letter from our executive director, Ben Cannon. I hope you have that in front of you. And in the letter, you will see a reference to the various documents that were mentioned earlier in the presentation, specifically House Bill 4018, the metrics and the conditions that were established for the process that the two institutions have gone through and continue to go through. I think we just wanted to take a moment to recognize the enormous work that's been undertaken by leadership in these institutions, to commend the significant and difficult work that has been completed thus far, and also recognize the community's involvement, the faculty, administration, the Board of Higher Education, and the Chancellor's Office in this effort. We also recognize that the incoming institutional boards will have a significant role to play in stabilizing the institutions and moving them forward. The whole purpose of the evaluation process that's been referenced by the presenters is really to ensure that Eastern and Southern are strong, stable, and nimble in the future and can fulfill their critical role in meeting regional needs and missions and serving Oregon students. And I just want to underscore that we're all committed, the HEC is committed to working with the institutions collaboratively with their boards, with their leaders, and faculty and the legislature during the evaluation process and to continue to see this work through. And I want to commend both presidents and staff at those institutions, because this is really exciting and really energizing. It makes me actually think about sending my kids to Eastern and Southern as well. So thank you for the opportunity, and we're happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Newark?
Mr. Chair, I just make a comment. I believe, I don't know if Representative Johnson, but this was good information, because it says legislature stay out of the way, let the local leaders, they'll solve the problem. You don't need our help.
No, I appreciate that, Representative. It's consistent with your question about what are the things we need to remove as barriers. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I expect we will ask you back at some point for further updates, and perhaps, President Kent, you should think about an exit memo for us as you finish up.
Exactly.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Anything else, the committee? Good work today. Thanks for the conversation and discussion. We'll close the informational hearing. And Victoria, are we all
set? We're good. We're not meeting Friday or Monday. Keep tuned for an agenda for Wednesday.
Stay tuned for an agenda on Wednesday, and we're adjourned.
A guy that I used to work for, who's also a Roy.
And we're adjourned.
A guy that I used to work for.